Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the DistressedPro.com professional podcast series. Today, I'm really happy to have Dave Van Horn on from PPR Note Co., and he and I have been chatting a little bit. Actually, Dave, when did we first connect? Because it seems like I know we've both been so busy, we had some missed connections a year and a half ago, maybe. I'm talking to you in June 2013. I think maybe we shared our first email. I don't know. It was early on.
A couple of my good friends were working with you through Distress Pro, and they were, you know, speaking real highly of you. And then the next thing you know, I reached out to you, and here we are, right?
Nice, yeah. And I'm thrilled to have you. This is, I've had folks on where we've talked about seconds before, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. And I have a lot of people on who talk about the note business, and I love having people on who are really like making it happen, and where you can demonstrate that and it's out there. And you're one of those guys. So I think it's awesome to have you on here, because I've got so many people who are listening to this who are, they understand that a lot of the stuff that they were doing isn't working, and that there's, you know, better ways to approach how to deal with, you know, getting a return on the money that they have. And it seems like more and more people are looking at owning the debt as a real avenue for some growth. And so when I get to have people on like you who, let's get into the numbers in a minute after we talk about kind of how you got here. I think it can be really eye opening. So I'm psyched to have you on.
That's great. I'm glad to be here.
So give us a little bit of the backstory, just so we know. Well, let's say first, what size company are you operating today?
We started in 2007 at a Houlihan's restaurant for lunch.
Okay.
and me and my partners were actually ready to kind of go out of business. I was in the real estate business. My partner was a lender, and my other partner was a commercial guy. And we kind of knew the market was tanking, and we had an opportunity to get into buying some distressed debt. And we started out 2007 with four loans.
So now today, your partners, what partners in what kind of business were you doing there?
Partners in PPR. I have two partners that are in that own the company with me. And it literally started at a lunch meeting, just like on a napkin kind of thing. And we started out with four delinquent mortgages. And, one was a grand slam, one was a home run, and two we lost money on. So it went on from there. And today we're managing just under $500 million in payoff, which is quite, you know, we own thousands of mortgages today, and we're constantly buying and selling.
Wow.
And we currently have 22 people work here. In the very beginning, we were working out of our houses with a laptop and a magic jack, you know, an 800 number pointed to my cell phone type thing.
Yeah.
And today we have a pretty significant office and a lot of staff, and we outsource a lot of stuff. So we're more of a player today. We consistently buy. We're direct to a bunch of banks, and we buy a lot of distressed mortgages from banks. We focus primarily on second mortgages. We do buy first as well, but we primarily focus on seconds. It's become our niche and our sweet spot, and for us, it's more lucrative. So that's really it really comes down to managing risk. We figured out a way to do it, and we're pretty successful at it, and we're in the data business sort of like you are. We're more statistical in the second space. And we kind of learned that statistics by accident. When we first started out, we were buying a lot of equity debt, you know, debt backed by equity.
Sure.
And then the equity fell out of the market. We continued to work the assets because obviously we already owned them. And then next thing you know, we realized, hey, the outcome was very similar. And we now that data kind of became the DNA of our business today, where we do buy a lot of assets with no equity behind them. So to a lot of people, that seems, you know, a little illogical, or but we have a system down, and it's worked very well for us. So, but we do venture into the first space. We do like a couple categories of delinquent first that we actively go after as well.
Well, so I want to back up a little bit just to paint a picture a bit. So you went from 2007, I'm talking in 2013, so that's 6 years. You went from in the note business 0 to a half a billion under in unpaid in 6 years. And so, did you come out of banking, or how does that? Where did that? How did that all materialize? Because I think a lot of people listen to that and they go,
Yeah, there's
"Well,
a gap there, right?
yeah,
Yeah, there's a little gap there.
he must have had connections, he knew people, you know."
Nah, not you know what? It's really going to sound kind of weird to you. It kind of happened by accident. I was running a real estate investor group in the Philadelphia area, and I used to interview the speakers that would come speak to our group. You know, we would have dinner, and like 75 people would get together and network. You know,
Yep.
and I would interview the speakers, and one time, you know, I had a partner in the group. He was a lender out of Pittsburgh. And he goes, "Ah, you got to hear this guy out of New York. He's raising money for delinquent debt." And we, you know, he came down. He was running a hedge fund out of Manhattan, and he came down and he spoke to us. And of course, I didn't do anything, but my partner John did. He invested some money with him, and
Yep.
then a few years later, we were like, "How's this guy paying us these high returns?" And then a few of the people that were investing with this guy kind of talked him into, "Hey, can you show us how to work these assets? We'll buy assets from you." And he did. He ran a little pilot program with like a dozen or so people, and he kind of did, you know, periodically did a call with us to help us work through our assets. But we were kind of really on our own. But he was guiding us, and he would sell us assets, and that was the benefit to him. So, you know, that's how we learned the workout side of the business, which is really like the collection side. You know, how do you collect on a delinquent asset?
Right.
And that's what he showed us. He showed us those, you know, how do you go towards the homeowner with a mail campaign, a phone campaign, a door knock service, you know, where we have somebody knock on the borrower's door, hand him a cell phone, and it'll be one of our asset managers on the other end. "Hey, we've
Yeah.
been trying to reach you." That kind of thing. And it was, he showed us a different approach than a bank, because a bank is typically, you know, you got to pay up or get out.
Right.
Whereas for us, it was what happened? Where you at now? What would you like to do? Let me help you do that. I'm your advocate. Meanwhile, legal's moving forward. So
Right.
it was kind of like that. And then we would tell them stories of how we helped other homeowners just to plant seeds in the borrower's mind, because we wanted to be their plan as to whether they want to stay or go and what that might look like. And then, you know, let's try to work on your plan and get that presented to management. And then we go over their financials and make sure they're qualified, that kind of thing. So
Right. So
it
before
wasn't just pay up or get out, you know?
Yeah. So before 2007, did you have any experience with owning
None at
and
all.
taking out debt at all?
None at all. And well, I had, no, I can't say none at all. I mean, I owned about 40 rental units of my own. I was a realtor. I had a title company. Like I said, my partner was my lender. He was my broker
Yeah.
for mortgages.
Yeah.
So we did have some experience. It wasn't like, but what I'm getting at is you, it really doesn't take that type of experience on the collection side.
Right.
And currently, we have seven asset managers that handle probably anywhere from 150 to 300 loans each in my office.
Yep.
And none of them have a real estate or lending background. They're, in fact, some of our best people were car salesmen. I have a lady that was a nutritionist. I have a lady that was a Spanish teacher. I have a lady, you know, it,
Yeah.
a lot of times, women are very good at it because they're soft spoken sometimes. Like I have this one gal, Kathy, you can never hang up on her. She, her
Yeah.
voice is like, "Hi, this is Kathy." You know, it's like,
Yeah.
oh my gosh. So it's a
Right,
different
you're hanging up on
approach.
your
Like,
sister or your mom or something.
well, it's sometimes, yeah, sometimes women have better, like a lot of times when we send out letters, we sign in a woman's name
Yeah.
because people will talk to a woman when they're behind in their debt more so than a guy. You know,
That's
they'll feel,
interesting.
"Oh, well, she's," yeah, there's some psychology to some of that stuff. And, but you're right. I mean, it's more of a collections, play than it is a real estate play all the time. Not that those skills hurt you, they don't.
Yeah.
But it's really building rapport. Building rapport is the number one, and that's why I think the car salesman guy, we have two car salesman guys that are here, and it, for them, they can build rapport in a New York minute.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, working the delinquent debts like taking candy from a baby because they can't leave the car lot and go down the street and buy another car. You own their debt, they
Right.
have to deal with it, or
Right.
you can start putting, you know, the legal pressure. So
So
it's
half billion, where did that you got the relationships with the banks and whatnot. How did that start? I mean, you didn't have
We
relationships
didn't have that
banks
in the
when you started.
beginning, to be straight
Okay.
up. So the guy that was teaching us the collection side started out selling us assets, and he wasn't a bank either. He was just a servicer. He was a hedge fund.
Yeah.
So we started dealing with other servicers first. And we were dealing with one of the larger servicers of delinquent seconds at the time, and one of the gentlemen that ran the trade desk there left and actually went to a major bank. And that probably took 4 or 5 years, and consistently buying, a couple million a month.
Yeah.
And what happened was, when he went to the major bank, then we were able to get in that major bank, and that was the first breakthrough for us. And it literally took like a good 4 years or so.
Yeah, it really
So
is relationship
it
oriented
didn't
like
happen
that, isn't it?
overnight. Yes, it's absolutely relationship. And then once we got into the first bank, it was easier to get into some other banks. And today we're into about half a dozen of the majors,
Nice.
where we're on with their trade desk. And even some of them, like, it's funny, like Wells, for example, I think they run about 14 trade desks. There's only two trade desks in the U.S. that deal in seconds. And if you called one of the other 12, they wouldn't even know the other two exist.
Right.
It's like, it's funny. Yeah, they oh, we have a trade desk that sells seconds, and they don't even
Yeah.
know. So it is like a needle in a haystack when you're trying to find what you want.
So what
But
was that? Sorry, go
I
ahead.
had done first mortgages, when I was in the real estate world. I started out doing rehab loans for people.
You
You
mean
know, like I had,
originating them or
yeah,
what?
I was originating them. So
Okay.
when I first got into the note business, because you were asking me, like, how did you end up from zero
Yeah.
to 60 that quick?
Yeah.
I owned a bunch of rental properties, and what I was doing was, I had lines of credit on my apartment buildings, and I had my self-directed IRA account, and I would create first mortgages for rehab contractors. And it was like hard money doing a first mortgage on a renovation property.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I got into the note space at first. And then when I met this guy doing the institutional seconds, it wasn't that big of a shift in mindset. You know what I mean? And then later on, but it took a while. I mean, I literally, the first time I met the gentleman, it was probably 3 years before I actually bought notes and
So,
started doing it. But today, people can do it, move along quicker. There's more resources today, I think.
right. What kind of balances were you putting out when you were originating? Are they small balance type stuff or?
I mean, most of them were like 50 grand, 75 grand,
Yeah.
25 grand, that kind of stuff. They were for property that was worth 100 grand after it was fixed up, that kind of thing.
So when
And I
you
did it locally,
Right. So yeah, which I think anybody who's getting started, you got to go with what you know. I mean, real estate is local. There's no doubt about it, especially at that kind of a level. And a lot of the private money guys that I know only do stuff they can drive to. And I think
Sure.
that makes a lot of sense. So when you first got started, how big, you said you bought four notes. What kind of money, like what kind of an acquisition or takedown was that?
Well, back then they were probably higher because they were equity notes, and when the market has it's what we were in an up market at that time,
Yeah.
and assets traded. So the debt world is direct proportion to real estate values. So when you're in an up market with equity, you're going to pay a premium for assets, and there's probably less supply, there's less foreclosures, and
Yeah.
then you hit the downturn like we just went through,
Yeah.
where you have a flood of delinquent assets, and the prices of the assets are cheaper. But then again, it takes a little bit longer to get out of your deals, right? It takes longer to foreclose. It takes
Yeah.
longer to sell a property. So it's a time for money equation. So there's always delinquent debt. There's
Yeah.
always somebody not paying their mortgage.
Right.
But it's a function of, so I'll give you an example. Our average second mortgage is 44,000, and that's kind of our sweet spot. We try to stay 0 to 60 or 0 to 75,000. That's kind of what we like.
That's the
And we
face of it,
normally
that's
don't.
the unpaid.
Yes. And then we normally don't like large first because we might have to reinstate one. So a lot of times we might stay under 250 or 350 on a first. We don't want a $1 million first mortgage and a $500,000 second. Those guys that buy those tend to be more geographic buyers, and we buy all over the country.
Okay.
And our philosophy is, we don't like too much risk in any one deal. Too much capital tied up in any one note. Whereas if I was, say, I lived in Southern California and I was buying these, $1 million first mortgage with a $500,000 second, and I'm a geographic buyer, that makes sense. So there's nothing wrong with that. But it's not our model. You know what I mean? Our
Right.
model is we buy all over the country. We're pretty heavy in about 40 states. And we tend to stay with those, mortgages under 60 grand, 75 grand, like that.
So in terms
That's
of
kind of where our sweet spot is.
cents on the dollar 2007 versus today, can you give us some sense of the delta on that, like what you were paying
Oh,
versus what you're paying now?
night and day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not unheard of to pay 40 cents and 60 cents back then for a second. Today, you can buy a second from 3 cents. Probably most of what we buy today is between 3 and 20 or 3 and 30,
Yep.
depending on equity and senior lien status. For the most part, it's probably between 3 and 20
So
because we're buying in huge quantities.
3% on 40,000, we're not talking about a lot of money.
Right.
Twelve
Now,
hundred
we don't
bucks.
buy a lot of that class, to be
Yeah.
honest with you, because a 3 cent asset means it's usually delinquent on the first 120 to 150 days plus.
Okay.
So that's your most dangerous, because even in second world, there's multiple categories. And that's your most dangerous category of secured second is the 2.5, 3 cent note, but you're, like you said, it's not very much money. I mean, people sometimes say, would you buy a loan in Detroit? And the answer is, well, if I paid $80 for it, I might, but I'm not going to pay
Right.
40 cents for it. You know,
Right.
it's kind of like that.
Yep.
So it's, and even if you, so I'll give you another example. If I had a first mortgage for 50 grand and a second mortgage for 50 grand and the property's worth 300 grand, well, that second would trade at a premium
Okay.
because there's so much equity. Now, that's rare today. But they still exist. I mean, they're out there.
So when you're buying now, what's a typical transaction for you in terms of like the number of notes that you'll take in one transaction from someone, from a bank?
Well, we recently just did one for 1,400 loans. Sometimes we'll look at 10,000 loans. Sometimes we'll look at 4,000 loans. It depends on the bank. Sometimes the bank allows us to cherry pick.
Yep.
Sometimes the bank, buyer takes everything. Good, we call it the baby in the bathwater.
Yep.
You have to take the good, the bad, the ugly. So it depends. Sometimes you'll buy, 1,000 assets to get 200 or 300 good assets,
So what does that
and the rest
process
you.
look like for you internally? I mean, that sounds like a lot of analysis. What is that, so this hits your desk and, so what do you
Well, that's where luckily I don't do that part. I have a couple major roles. Like me and my two partners all have different roles, and my roles are, raising capital, selling notes, and I oversee the education piece, which is kind of our marketing to sell more notes, My partner John, he runs a data team and he oversees operations. So he does all the analytics. So, I'll go raise capital, pass it off to John. John will go out and he runs our trade desk here, and then he goes and deals with other trade desks. And they're really a data team. He has a staff of three under him. He has actually four. There's four people under him. And they do everything. They do all kinds of analytics. They'll do some web scraping type stuff. So I'll give you an example. We have a guy here who can write custom software. To give you an example, that could read 10,000 credit reports and have a report on John's desk tomorrow. So basically, he could write software that would be reading a credit report like you were reading it.
Yeah.
So you know how you'd read a credit report and say, this one's accessible, this one isn't?
Sure.
Well, he'll write software that'll scrape that and, have a report. Well, out of these 10,000 loans, these 3,000 look okay
Right.
credit-wise, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he could do the same thing with Pacer through bankruptcy documents. He'll write software. He'll basically create anything you want. If I went
That's
in and
pretty
said, I
cool.
need you to, yeah, it is pretty cool. So that ability enables you to analyze a lot of loans very quickly. Typically, we have 10 days to 2 weeks to do any due diligence on. It could be 10,000 loans, 5,000 loans. You have that short of a window to really look at those assets and decide what you want.
So you're out there, you source it, you get your tape, you get your data, you pass it over to your operations team. They run the kind of processes that you're talking about. Now you make an acquisition, And what happens after that?
Well, what's interesting is they keep the data on what they buy, they keep the data on what they don't buy, and they keep the data on the outcome of after they bought and worked it through the process. And our typical loan's in-house 6 to 8 months. So there's a pretty, we're definitely a velocity shop. We do hold some assets, but for the most part, after a short period of time, everything's pretty much for sale.
So it comes in and you start assigning.
They come in. We also have a document manager when the assets come in. They get a lot of the data comes in electronically. A lot of documents come in electronically at first, and then the actual hard files get shipped in. We inventory them. And one thing about us when we sell notes is we won't sell a note unless we have all the collateral. So that's one of the bonuses of us dealing with us. So it's not a case where you don't know what you're getting, because that happens out there in the real world.
So
You buy assets from somebody that didn't get them yet.
explain that to someone who's listening, who's not, who's uninitiated on that. What does that mean that about the collateral?
Well, I think it's a value add that we provide that most servicers don't. So in other words, you could go, say you got five buddies together to go buy a bunch of assets, and you go to buy the assets, and then they ship you the collateral, and you find out all the stuff's missing.
Right.
And it wasn't what you thought. Now you're chasing them, or you're going to a document retrieval company trying to get your, Allonge history or your assignment history, that kind of thing. And what that means is a lot of times you can't foreclose on those assets. And to give you perspective, we initiate foreclosure on about half the loans we buy, but we actually foreclose on about 8 to 10%. So it's
Interesting.
less than 10.
And
So
all the
if I
rest
don't
worked
have all the
out.
documents, I'm kind of screwed. I can't finish my process
Right.
with the homeowner, So it's critical that you have your collateral. Now we have contractual agreements with the people we deal with, and they're usually pretty good with us. At this point, we have good relationships. So that we would get a credit, or they would give us another asset, or they would give us a refund, or whatever. So,
Right.
but in the real world, that's not what happens out there with a lot of the hedge funds, especially in the private note sellers. It gets ugly quick, where you could go buy assets and you're not getting all your collateral. In fact, one of the best trades we ever did was with a company out of Texas when we first started. We got the best price in the world on assets, and guess what happened? To this day, we're missing a third of the collateral. It's basically useless notes to us. And the only way to do anything, I would have to sue them to get what the cost of the suit would be. It's like you're stuck. And basically, it ended up being the most expensive assets we ever bought. But it was a lesson well learned of what to do and what not to do, and some of the safeguards you can put in place when you're buying assets out there. But
Right.
today, we don't really have that problem. We have really good relationships that we do continuous business with the same folks, So it's a little different. But to your point, collateral is critical. And one of the things that we pride ourselves on is we won't sell an asset without the collateral, and we warranty that it's a valid lien, it's in second position, that kind of thing. So.
Right. So when you say collateral, and so I just did, we just did went through this commercial. We're actually still going through a commercial real estate note teleseminar and webinar series. And a lot of, when we're talking about collateral over there, we're talking about the property most of the time. And when you're talking
Right.
about collateral over here, you're talking about the paper
Paperwork.
that you've got,
Yeah.
right?
We're
So the
talking about
file.
the note, the mortgage, the assignment chain, the allonge chain, the accounting on the note. That's what we mean by collateral. So
Clean, complete files.
basically, yeah, because otherwise you'll have a file that you can't work.
Right.
So if you can't pursue it, it's like you bought bad paper, basically.
So then that kind of leads us to, you're talking about a file that you can't work. What's it mean to work a file? What are some of the, like, how do you look to, how do you evaluate, how are you going to move that from you've purchased it to now you've profited with it? What does
Well, what
that look
happens in
like?
our world, most of the work's done in the first 3 to 4 weeks. So we get all the, we inventory all the collateral, they get assigned to an asset manager, and then that asset manager starts his mail campaign, his phone campaign, his door knock service. And then he'll tee up legal on about day 16, where they'll fire off a demand letter, and then 30 days later, they're doing list pendants. So meanwhile, they're still reaching out to the homeowner, trying to get in contact with them. So sometimes the hardest part of our business is just getting a hold of someone. But meanwhile, we stop for no one. We move in all directions at once, and then they fire up legal. Now, the legal process will vary in different states. But you know, a lot of these guys are handling hundreds of loans, so they'll just, you know, it's just like if they were doing a short sale, they would put that file on the back desk till the short sale surfaced. Or if they were dealing in New York State, they'd put that file on the back desk because it's a longer foreclosure cycle. But and they'll work on whatever's coming quickest, like you know, Georgia or Texas or whatever. You know, so they'll the deed of trust states will tend to come sooner. The other states come a little later, but it doesn't matter at the end of the day in these guys' worlds because they're working so many assets.
So
If that makes any sense.
if I'm an asset manager, that file hits my desk. Am I gonna you know what you've paid for it. What sort of strategy in terms of di working with the homeowner, what sort of strategy is he looking at or she looking at in order to move that through and have a win for you on that?
They'll go, like I said, when they, you know, they'll go down once they get a hold of a homeowner, then it's they'll tell stories. Hey, we helped this family out in Oregon. They were able to do, they were able to borrow money from their 401k penalty free because they were in foreclosure. And I saw corporate give them a discounted payoff. So in other words, maybe corporate accepted 20 grand on a $40,000 payoff. Maybe we paid 10 for it, and maybe 20 is acceptable to us, you know. And then they might go, well, I don't have a retirement account. Oh, great. Well, maybe you're qualified for our friends and family program. You know, we had a family in Delaware where Uncle Louie stepped in and lent his niece the 20 grand. And I saw a corporate accept that. Is that something that might work for you? Whereas we would sell the note to Uncle Louie. Now, Uncle Louie might be more inclined to lend the money now that he has a secured lien on his niece. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe he doesn't need to be secured. But you get the idea. And then they might say, well, you know what? I don't have any family or friends. Everybody hates me. Well, maybe you're qualified for our discounted arrears program with a payment plan. Do you have an income tax check coming? Do you have what, you know, a life insurance policy? Do you have, we've seen people sell a boat to get some arrears. So we always address the payment. We always address the arrears. And if none of those type of options seem to be working, then we start talking about, you know, cash for keys and seller assistance. And all of a sudden, the other options might not look so bad if their intent was to stay in the property. You know, you start talking about seller assist and short sales, and do you have it on the market right now? And where are you guys going to go? You know, it's they start to realize, well, maybe that first or second option wasn't so bad.
So you're looking for payoff. You're not looking to get it reperforming. You're looking for payoff.
No, we're actually looking for reperforming. We tend to do better with once the asset's reperforming, once we get something towards arrears. The arrears, we get arrears a lot, and it's shocking to a lot of people sometimes how much we can get in arrears. And I mean, we don't get arrears on every single one, but we do. We average over $1,000 per loan, and that's every loan in the portfolio. But we've had arrears as high as, I think the highest was in the 60,000s. So sometimes you do get a large arrears check. But you know, once we get a payment plan, we let that season, and typically we sell those notes to real estate investors as reperforming. And what we do is we warranty them. So if they go non-performing again, we actually give them a credit towards another note if we can't get it reperforming again. So we have a pretty neat program that way too. So when they're performing, it's kind of like owning a rental property with cash flow without the headaches of the rental property. Because once they go performing, we put them in servicing. We use FCI typically, and they, you know, charge like $15 to service the loan. And then somebody were to buy that loan from us once it was reperforming, they just continue on typically with the same servicer.
So if a real estate investor is going to get started with you buying some of this stuff that you've got reperforming, what's that typically look like for a first transaction or a minimum buy-in to get involved with something like that?
Well, I think our average is around 18,000, 17, 18,000, but most of those reperforming, especially second mortgages, typically range from 10 to 30 grand range. Now, there's some over that, some under that sometimes, but most of them are in that range. And they typically pay returns of 15, 20% on payments. But they also have a kicker. So, you know, we might have bought a loan for 10 grand. We smiled and dialed, got it reperforming, sold it to a real estate investor for 17 or 18 grand. Well, it might have a payoff of 25 or 30, which nobody knows when that'll happen. You know, if the person refinanced or sold their property, whatever. But you'll just collect payments of, you know, 275, 300, 3 and a quarter, whatever those payments were. And that's what gives you that 15 to 20% return range, and it's usually based on a little bit on equity, how much equity is in the deal, that kind of thing. But we warranty that. We warranty the initial investment principal. So if you bought a note from us for 18 grand, you collected 3 grand, the loan stopped paying, we would step in and reservice it for free. If we couldn't get it reperforming, we would actually replace that note with a note credit, and our asset, it would go back to the original asset manager, and that asset manager actually gets a charge back. So he has a vested interest in getting that thing paying.
Right.
So it's a pretty neat program we have.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, somebody's able to come in with really not that much money and have the whole thing professionally managed and worked out, soup,
Service, yep.
from cradle to grave, I guess. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we do a lot of people do it through their retirement accounts too,
Yeah.
self-directed. They get a note, and they feel good. They own the note. So it's hey, my 80-year-old mother buys them.
Right. Yeah. I actually I've got
There's
a
not a lot to it. There's not a lot to it once it's in servicing, really. And the servicer does all the accounting, and they
Yeah.
charge a fee of like $15 a month, but they send a 1098 to the borrower, and they do all the accounting, and you just take your monthly statements and hand it to your accountant, and you're done. It's
Yeah.
pretty hands off.
Yeah. I actually have a call coming up in the next couple of weeks. It's somebody who was with Pensco for a long, long time, which is don't know if you know them. They're one of the
Yeah, it's self
direct
direct,
IRA
yeah.
companies. So, well, I want to do this. I know that you're a very busy guy, and we had to kind of put this out a couple of weeks even to get on here. But if there's demand, I'd love to have you come back and do a webinar if we could talk about it. I mean, one of the things that I have kind of there's a few different groups of people who listen to this and who subscribe to distresspro.com. And so there's sort of the acquisitions team, and they've got a fund, and they're out there, and they're working it that way. And then there's the sort of the brokers and bird dogs who are looking to marry, some folks together and make a deal happen. And then I have an awful lot of people who listen to this who have some money, and they're sick and tired of the returns that are out there. They don't like, they've looked at a lot of the different sort of make money in real estate type of stuff, and they're looking at notes as something that is a little bit more secure and a little bit more stable, but they're independent investors. So I wonder if it might make sense for us to have you back and do a thing where we could talk about how they'd get started with that.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of like when I first meet with an investor or a note buyer, it really comes down to what kind of investor or note buyer are you? Do you consider yourself passive? Do you consider yourself active? How much time do you have to devote to it? And then you kind of go from there, because there's opportunity for everybody. It's just like, real estate. There's a million ways to make money in real estate. There's a million ways to make money in the note business or the debt business.
Yep.
And it's a function of, yeah, sure, it's a little bit of a learn by doing business, especially if you're going to work non-performing assets yourself. And if that's the case, it's like anything. You want to get a little bit educated in it, maybe find a mentor in it, network with people doing it. And that's exactly what I did too. It's that way with any business,
Yeah.
just surround yourself with the people that are doing it, guys like yourself, to get more informed. And then now you are taking risk off the table by doing that. I used to trade stock options, right? Well, that sounds foreign to somebody that invests in mutual funds.
Right.
But once they if they study or they learn how to do options, then they go, well, that's a lot easier. I can manage that risk now. I have the knowledge, or I
Right.
network with people trading options. So it's the same idea. I mean, it's like anything like that,
Yeah, it really is
So
key. I mean, when I started in the real estate business, that is the first thing I had, got hooked up with a mentor. And then when I decided to move into the auction business, which is a completely different beast, I sought out the best, possible mentor for that. And it really does. It takes all that like wandering around, wondering what the heck is going on, what should I do next, what happens if this happens, kind of just eliminates that. And I think if you're really going to be serious about getting into starting a thing that you don't have any experience in, and you're talking about having real money at stake and putting in, your own time, probably, lots of it, at least in the beginning, I mean, at least for me in my life, I've always I mean, even just getting started in sales, I sought out and had a mentor for that. So, and I hear from a lot of people. I get a lot of emails, and there's definitely a lot of people who are out there looking for that. And so that is something that you, somebody comes in and invests with you. There is some mentorship involved with that.
Yeah, we have different levels. It depends on what, somebody's trying to do. If somebody's just, interested in, investing in performing notes. We also have a fund too. We raise capital from accredited investors for our funds. Some people are interested in that. But then some people want to get, a little more down and dirty and dial and call homeowners and that kind of thing. And then we do teach that part of the business as to, okay, I got a homeowner on the phone. What do I say when they want to file bankruptcy? Or what do I say when they say, how do I know you own my loan? We give them the verbiage of what we use, types of scripts. We give them our attorney lists. And we also do conference calls, that kind of thing, for up to a year. And you can call in and go over your actual deal. So if you're active and you're really buying these notes, we actually, some of our students from early on are literally our biggest competitors in the business. So
Double-edged sword.
it's kind of it's a bittersweet testimony, right? No,
Yeah.
but no, they're great guys, and they went on to start their own companies. And there's a couple companies that are literally some of our biggest competitors locally that were actually came under our mentorship early on. So it's good. It's all positive stuff, though.
Cool. So I know we're bumping up against our scheduled time, but I wanna close off with something I'm hearing a lot of, and I'd like to get your insights and opinions. You started before the downturn. A lot of people are saying to me lately, especially with all the positive news that's out there. Oh, it's over. There's none of this stuff is left, and that just the opportunity is past. Which when I have my own opinions and data, but I'd be interested in your take.
Well, I mean, you're right. I follow a lot of economists. We do follow a lot of data, and then we also follow these trade desks. And when we look at the amount of shadow inventory that the banks still have, it's still pretty significant.
It is.
I believe they are trying to hold on to it a little bit longer because they see the signs in the market that things are starting to turn around. And I think their feeling is they'll get more for their assets,
Yeah.
which I believe they are correct. So if I'm a bank and I'm able to hold on to the assets a little longer, I'll probably get more money for them. And I think that's a little bit of what's going on out there. But at the end of the day, they still have a lot of delinquent assets on the books. They do prefer short sales over REOs at this point. Took a long time for them to figure that out.
Yeah.
But it's still okay. And I mean, there's still, I mean, just the first mortgage industry is 8 trillion, over 8 trillion. The seconds are close to a trillion, and there's always going to be somebody not paying. I think what'll happen in time, you'll start to see the cost of the assets go back up. But the economists I'm seeing aren't expecting to see the equity come back to previous levels until about 2017. Now that's a general statement because, of course, real estate's local, like you
Right.
said. But generally speaking, they're saying by about 2017, most of the equity will be back into the market to the levels it was, back in 2005 or 2006 before the downturn. So
Right.
that's a
Lord willing,
positive
and the creek
sign
don't
for us.
rise.
So my philosophy is buy as many assets as you can,
Yeah.
and if the equity comes back, well, my whole portfolio just went through the roof. So, and then people will be able to refinance, and people will be able to sell again. And if you're holding it, say you bought a delinquent first for 40 cents or 50, 60 cents on the dollar, and then now the equity comes back, well, that thing's worth 90 cents.
Right.
It's not a bad thing here. So it's the same way with us. If delinquent seconds go from 20 cents to trading at 45 cents or 40 cents, well, I doubled my money. I didn't do anything. I mean, so it's equity will. And then people are starting to cash out. Say it's 2017, let's pretend the equity's back, so and so can sell their house or move. Well, now I'm getting a full payoff on an
Right.
asset I bought for a song back in 2013 or 14. So that's not such a bad thing, I mean, in my mind, because your yield will go through the roof. If just say you bought a performing asset from us and you're making 18% on that. Well, if you get paid off 2 years later, your yield's like 150%. Your
Right.
yield's going to get through the roof. So And then you could go back and buy more assets or whatever. But you get what I'm getting at. It's not a necessarily a bad thing. And there's always delinquent debt out there. There's even credit card debt that you could buy state specific that where someone owns a house. Like I can go to a Unifund out there and say, hey, I want delinquent credit card debt where someone owns a house. And I can attach that to the property for about 400 to 600 illegal, and in essence became a second. I mean, you have a lot of different kinds of debt out there, from auto debt to student loan debt's the new bubble, So
It is, yeah.
there's always going to be debt out there. Now, granted, we're all in the real estate background, we kind of like that space. I like it because I haven't found anything else to beat it, and I've done financial planning and all that kind of stuff, traded options. But the thing I love about this business is I can buy a delinquent asset at a discount that's secured to a piece of real estate, and my yields are, I'm getting great yields with collateral. And
Yeah.
that's a big difference in my mind. Because if I invest in, a stock or whatever, I don't have collateral really. It's more like a place in a bet kind of thing. Whereas this is, no, I got, I'm buying debt and it's secured to a property. And there's still emotional equity there. You know what I mean? People have raised their kids there. They have two cats, a dog. It's not easy for them to up and move,
Yeah.
So I think the debt space is phenomenal. I'm just glad I found it,
Right. Well, Dave, it's been awesome having you on here, and it was kind of a fire hose. So I hope folks took it up.
Sorry about
No,
that.
not at all. I love it, and I hope folks soaked it up. And we'll look forward to we'll see what folks say. And if people want to hear more, then I'll look forward to having you on for for a follow-up webinar where maybe we can dive into something a little bit more. And other than that, David, it's been really, really great having you on. I really appreciate it. Anything you want to leave folks with?
No, but I would love to get back on and I'm sure we could go a little deeper into some of this stuff. It's a great business. I think it's a learn by doing business, and I think, like you said, if you can get a little educated in the space and network with some people that are doing it, you'll do phenomenal. And there's a lot of opportunity right now. I think it's limitless almost, so jump in there, right?
Yeah,
Take some
definitely.
action.
All right.
All
Well,
right,
thanks,
Brett.
Dave.
Thanks a lot.
We'll talk to you
Take
soon.
care, buddy.
Okay.